This is Alan Karpik. My favorite thing on Friday is to get a chance to talk to Tom for Saturday morning chat. So we do actually do record this early, but looking forward to our list for this week, which will be Gene Cady's best teams. Is it his best teams or our favorite teams? Did we determine that, or is it a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Best,
okay.
Favorite. Playing at Houston, having been there 25 years as a head coach, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I want to thank our sponsors, and that's, of course, Follett's and Purdue Federal Credit Union, East End Grill, now doing carryout back in West Lafayette, in Lafayette, down 10th Street in Lafayette. First Source Bank, Home Field Apparel, the Dive Restaurant, also doing carryout in Lafayette, and Charter's Team Remaxability Plus. And we want to also thank our other folks in Lafayette that are doing carryout in Lafayette area, I should say, Whitaker Inn, Arnie's, Bruno's, just saw O this week picking up a pizza, and we appreciate him. And, of course, Smee's place in Indianapolis. If you're a Northside Indianapolis person, make sure you visit Vanita. She'd be happy to chat with you and take your order. And, of course, all the Arnie's restaurants in Indy. Kurt Cohen and company do a great job down there. So, all right, we have we are going to do our next week of the draft, so to speak. Gene Cady's favorite/best teams, and we'll debate that a little bit, or at least discuss it back and forth. But Tom, you get the first salvo. Is team number five for you?
All right, team number five for me, Alan. I'm going to go with the 86-87 Boilers.
Okay.
The junior season of the three amigos, if you will, Troy Lewis, Everett Stevens, and Todd Mitchell. That was a fun team, Alan. In some ways, I think I've spoken to you about this. I spoke to Troy Lewis and Todd Mitchell. You know, that team in a lot of ways, I don't know, it may have been maybe a notch better than the senior year team just because of Doug Lee.
Yeah.
The transfer from Texas A&M. I'm still trying to figure out how the heck he got to Texas A&M from what was a Washington, Illinois. But nonetheless, he finally made it back where he belongs, is my point. And, boy, what a player. I remember he got drafted in the second round, I think, by the Houston Rockets. He had his rival at Illinois, Doug Altenberger. And you factor in Doug Lee with those three players. I tell you what, it was a fun Purdue team that won a share of the Big Ten. As you know, Alan, we can never forget, I don't want to be Mr. Negative, but that last game of the year at Michigan when they got blown out cost them the outright Big Ten title, right? Let Indiana get a share. Let Indiana get number one seed. Of course, Indiana wins the national title, but enough about that, right? And that was still a fun Purdue team that had a lot of talent and set the stage for what was a really special 1987-88 team that only lost four games and earned the number one seed in the Big Ten.
Yeah, the 87 team, 25-5 overall, 15-3 in the Big Ten. And I think you're right. I mean, that's a good debate on who was better between the 87 and 88 teams. Doug Lee was a difference maker in terms of his toughness and what he brought to that team. And Todd, Troy, and Everett really kind of, especially Everett Stevens, really coming into his own that year. Troy and Todd certainly had developed that as full-time starters in 85-86, the year before, and Troy had pretty much started since a freshman. But, yeah, I think that team certainly was kind of the emergence of Purdue on the national scene because ESPN, all of a sudden, you know, they had the two games back-to-back that year where they brought in lights against Louisville. It was a made for TV game on Sunday. Purdue beats Louisville. They keep the lights the special lighting in for the Iowa game the following night, Monday night, the big Monday, 9 o'clock or 9:30 start against number two ranked Iowa, and the Hawkeyes beat Purdue in that game. I can remember we've talked about this, Brad Lowhouse on the press. Purdue having a hard time with that has been a storyline for Purdue over the years, but also Roy Marble, B.J. Armstrong, we're seeing every Sunday night do a great job on the Michael Jordan documentary. But
I can't believe this. That team won a share of the Big Ten.
Yep.
And only got a number three seed in the NCAA tournament, which was criminal, I think. Of course, they lost. They went to Syracuse. They beat Northeastern and Reggie Lewis, I believe.
Right.
And they lost to Florida, led by, of course, Dwayne Tchintsis. and Vernon Maxwell. I still can't believe that team is only number three seed.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because that game against – you mentioned the game against Michigan to close out the regular season. Purdue had clinched a tie by beating Michigan State. Still was in those travel partner days. They beat Michigan State the week before – the 2 or 3 days before, probably 2 days before, I guess, and go to Michigan and just get thumped. Antoine Joubert, a guy that Purdue recruited, the judge, remember his nickname, went off on Purdue, could not miss. That was still a very talented Michigan team, to say the least, I think, with Roy Tarpley. I think Roy Tarpley was still on that team. He may have been gone from the year before, but you had Gary Grant. You had some other guys.
Sean Higgins,
the guys that came in and eventually won the national championship for the Wolverines in 89. But, yeah, that was a tough one, and they're on my list. I ranked them a little bit higher. We'll talk about that. But I'll pick my fifth, and I'm going to go with kind of best teams in my view, and this is also an interesting one because I think you got a lot of different ones you can pick from, obviously, from Gene Katie. But I'm going to say the 96 team, 26-6 overall, 15-3, the three-peat team, the team that that also was picked, seventh, eighth in the Big Ten before that season. That was a common refrain at that time, Tom, because you had after Purdue won the Big Ten in 94 with Big Dog, 95 with Waddell and Konzo Martin, Purdue picked to be in the lower half of the Big Ten, wins the Big Ten that year, comes back with the three-peat team. And this was a team that ended up being a number one seed, amazingly. You know, you talk about that three seed in 87. I don't think the 96 team was anywhere near as talented. I think the 96 team did get the most out of its talent. Certainly one of the most homogenous teams of all time. I don't think they had anybody really averaging over 12 points a game with Chad Austin, Brad Miller, and then, of course, all the seniors, the six seniors, and the one that you wrote about on Friday with Justin Jennings, Roy Hairston, you got Brandon Brantley, Todd Foster,
Herb Dove,
and I'm missing Porter Roberts, and a very, very team that was very even keeled, overcame kind of a little bit of a swoon in the middle of the Big Ten season to go on a huge run. They were ousted by Georgia and Tubby Smith's team in Albuquerque. That was a tough way to end the season, but it was kind of indicative of this team not being a great team, and it came very close to being the first number one seed to get beat in the by Western Carolina.
Remember, that was the year. I'm pretty sure that was the year. Remember, Gene Katie's stepdaughter was ill, and he made several trips back and forth during the year to New York City, if I remember right, really putting even more strain on him. What turned out to be, like you said, a real fun year.
Yeah, and unbelievable. That was a game. You're right. That was that year, and his father died, and Lisa, his daughter, who has since passed away, had an accident in the New York area, and that was a week of about January 13th. Purdue goes to Minnesota, a good Minnesota team, and beats the Gophers on the road in a very emotional game for Gene Katie. Sports Illustrated did a big story on it. Gene made, I think, did not miss a game during that, but he was flying around the country. That's where it paid to have Bruce Weber on your staff, I suppose, at that time, and being able to keep things organized. But, yeah, very difficult time for Gene Katie and for Purdue. And, again, I just didn't view that as a great team in terms of talent. You really didn't have it. You didn't have any NBA players in that group. But by the same token, this was a team that really did well. And overachieved, and of course, no Purdue fans will forget the three-peat. So, all right, Tom, you're up for your next pick.
This one may be a little bit of a – this is one I liked, personally, warm, fuzzy memories. Another unexpected success story, right? How often we say that about Gene Katie teams. I'm going Allen, 1989-90 Purdue Boilermakers, the Steve Scheffler team. I mean – you want to talk about a fun year. Of course, Tony Jones was also what a senior that year, right, Alan? And that was a team I'll never forget. I think got off to, I want to see, a 12-0 start in the Big Ten. It was a heck of a run. They shot up the shot up the rankings. And, of course, again, it was all about Steve Sheffield, who I think was the Big Ten Player of the Year, set the record, I think maybe the NCAA record for field goal percentage, just the personification of a Boilermaker, right, with Jim Rowinski and then Steve Sheffield. And I tell you what, Alan, you know, still I can – I remember the game in East Lansing against the Spartans when they had a chance to, I think, win the Big Ten. They got beat. Had to settle for a number two seed. Remember that? Then they got to go to the Hoosier Dome, just 60 miles down the road from West Lafayette. And, of course, they beat Northeast Louisiana. And then the infamous loss to Texas, where Katie got in trouble afterwards for ripping the referees. But still a fun team that had a chance to do some special things. And, again, the Steve Sheffield era, especially that last year for him, was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, Panama Myers is the name in Purdue history, the guy that had the block of the Tony Jones shot. And I had the experience of walking to the press conference with Gene Katie, and I knew that that wasn't going to go well. I should have known. I was probably too young at the time, just 30 years old, to try to be able to tell him to calm down. But he was hot going in, and he did not he pounded on the dais and got himself in a little bit of trouble. But I also think, you know you have to have the opportunity to have that was a very good team. I have the advantage of having a media guy in front of me. Purdue did get off to an 8-0 Big Ten start, had beaten Michigan, a number 4 ranked Michigan, whooped them by 18 on the road. The Boilermakers were ranked 8th, came back, lost to Michigan State at home, and that ended that streak. And of course, the Spartans and Steve Smith and Matt Stiginga, a team that beat Purdue in a very controversial, you know, yeah. I think it was Tony Jones, I believe, that got kind of mugged in the backcourt. Michigan State makes the steal and gets the win in that game, in the last game of the Big Ten, or Purdue would have had a share of the Big Ten title. That was a very, very good team. Nobody quite like Steve Sheffield, too, and Tony Jones, two self-made guys, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Purdue never had a tougher guy in the backcourt than Tony Jones. You know, not a great scorer necessarily, though he proved he could do that. He became a scorer. And Steve Sheffield just, again, 68%, I think it was, from the field that year. And I still remember the best thing about Steve Sheffield, every time he got handed the ball when shooting a free throw, he'd say thank you to the ref.
Remember, too, every time he got a foul, he'd raise his hand.
Yeah. Even though he didn't have to do that, they quit that rule by that time. But that was definitely a very fun team to watch. Yes, a disappointing loss to a good Texas team.
Oh, yeah.
Lance
Tom
Blank.
Tom Penders, the coach.
And they had Lance Blanks was a really good scorer,
yeah.
And a team that beat Purdue in a tough loss at the what was the Hoosier Dome turned RCA Dome. I remember that game vividly.
You know, Alan, too. I think that was like the first year of the Breslin Center, too. I remember it was almost brand new.
Correct. That was the first
year.
First year,
I remember Eric Snow, too.
Yeah.
Ended up playing in the NBA. Was a terrific point guard that a lot of people forget about from those Spartan teams of Judd Heathcote in his later years.
Yeah, and it was a tough Purdue had them on the ropes, certainly, there. And you're right, the first game in the Breslin Center, and the Boilermakers come up just short in a mm-hmm. tough loss in that deal. But, yeah, you're looking at pretty good players when you're talking about Steve Smith and even Dwayne Stevens, who you see on the bench now, longtime Michigan State
yeah.
assistant Mark Montgomery, who played, and
sure.
even Sean Respert as a freshman. I think he redshirted that year, so I'm not sure he played, but a very, very tough loss for the Boilermakers up there. All right, I'm going to pick my team, and I'm kind of still sticking with what I think were the best teams, but the 1998 team, that team with Brad Miller, Chad Austin as seniors. And I really liked the way that Purdue got as high ranked as number 5 that year, if you can imagine, and had a chance also to win the Big Ten championship. Michigan State, it was Tom Izzo's first championship. I can remember Purdue playing in the Alamo Bowl, the first one,
yeah.
1997, December 30th, and his team, I thought, well, you know, and I can remember being in San Antonio and Michigan State playing the Purdue and Mackey that day, That was one of the first December 30th, December Big Ten games, and Michigan State beat them, and that kind of and beat Purdue badly, 74-57. Mateen Cleaves and company, of course, the Spartans go on and go to the Final Four. I believe it was Izzo's first Final Four, but one of the best games I've ever seen at Purdue that I didn't see physically but watched on TV, though our guys were up there covering it, a Purdue beating Michigan State 99-96. That was after Izzo and company raised the banner in the pregame ceremonies because they had claimed at least a share of the Big Ten title. Of course, Purdue beats Michigan State 99-96 in overtime, and Brad Miller had a monster game, I think 30 points and 12 rebounds. But Purdue did not get a share by beating the Spartans, but it did give a share to Illinois and the Fighting Illini and Lon Kruger. And, of course, then Purdue, that was the first year of the Big Ten tournament, and Purdue goes to the Big Ten tournament, gets to the championship game, loses to Michigan, but beat Indiana and Illinois on en route to that. And really had a great chance in 98 in your hometown, St. Louis, coming to St. Louis and the Kiel Center, I believe it was called. And we've told this story a little bit, but we made up our Final Four congratulations, Gene Katie's versions of the Gold and Black. I can remember we actually had them printed and ready to go. Or we were going to have them printed if Purdue beat Stanford, because that regional looked open. I mean, you had Stanford. I know Stanford was a little bit more highly ranked than Purdue, but you had Valpo and Rhode Island with Luther Clay on the other side of the bracket. Of course, Valpo was the team that I believe that was the year of the Bryce Drew shot against Mississippi.
Yep.
And but this was a really good team and a very, very balanced team, and a team that had they been able to get past Mark Madsen and company, probably would have had a great chance to get to the Final Four. Brad Miller, though he did not get drafted, you know, he was a guy that started to really show his ability. And it had also Jerron Cornell, and probably one of the most important and yet kind of the Purdue, maybe a Purdue jinx of sorts. I think Purdue was about as good as any team in the country, but a game against Indiana on February the 10th, a game that Purdue won, Jerron Cornell hurts his ankle in that game after Purdue had beaten Ohio State. You get this by 32 points on the road. Jerron Cornell dings up his ankle. He misses a couple weeks. Never was the same, in my opinion, for his career. And Cornell was really an all-Big Ten level player at that time in his sophomore season. I think that was the missing link for Purdue in terms of that outside shooting ability and having that extra weapon. But still a really good team to watch.
The high ankle sprain, Alan.
Yeah.
Real quick, I got a chance to go to Chicago for the first weekend, saw Purdue beat Delaware, coached by Mike Bray.
Yeah.
And they beat Detroit, I think. And there were a bunch of upsets, Alan. And like you said, that really cleared a path for Purdue coming to St. Louis, a drivable distance for Purdue fans. Place was packed. Purdue was the highest-seeded team there in St. Louis, and like you said, got beat. Was very tough. But Mike Robinson, another guy, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, remember, people forget he was McDonald's All-American from Peoria, Illinois, was on those teams. He never really fulfilled that hype, but he was a good active guy around the basket.
He played well, very, very well in that tournament. He was in the cover of our Sweet Home Chicago issue, and he was something. Yeah, Arizona gets beat in that regional.
Yeah, Kansas got beat too.
Early, and Kansas was beaten, and that made a big difference.
Yep.
I don't know who beat Kansas. Was that?
That was a Jacques Vaughn game where they wanted him to take a shot, and he passed up the potential game-winning shot late. I can't remember who beat him, but that was one of the famous Kansas flameouts, but I can't remember who that one was, too.
Yeah, and it was a situation. Yeah, Arizona lost to Maryland. Maryland. That's right. No, Arizona actually got beat by Utah in the regional final. But in Purdue's regional, Arizona. You know who lost? Who beat Kansas? Was Rhode Island and Luther Clay.
There you go.
75. And of course, then Rhode Island turns around and beats Valpo after the Purdue loses to Stanford. Stanford beats Rhode Island.
Who was Rhode Island's coach, Alan? Tom Penders.
Tom Penders, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. there's certain people, certain figures out there that the Panama Myers, the Tom Penders, the guys that were a nemesis to Purdue from that standpoint. So All right, your pick for your third.
Okay, I'm going to go to my freshman year, 1983-84. You're very familiar with this team, as all teams, but what a blast, I tell you. What, talk about low expectations, no expectations. Picked ninth or tenth in the Big Ten, I believe the Boilermakers were in the fall of 83. What do, Alan? They shock the world by winning the Big Ten championship. I think they went 15-3, of course. Jim Rowinski, Matt Gaddis and company, Herb Robinson, James Bullock. Well, what a fun squad. Gene Cady was the national coach of the year, I believe, too, Alan. And
he
just
was
a fun team. I mean, the evolution of Rowinski is sort of like Kurt Warner for the St. Louis Rams 20 years ago. I mean, just Cinderella-type stories. And Rowinski was just a total freak. And that team, like a lot of Purdue teams, unfortunately did not do well in March. I remember they had to play Memphis State back then with I think still Keith Lee, and
right.
Dana Kirk was the head coach. And, of course, they got beat. I think they had a bye, Alan, if you can believe that. That's how long ago that was.
But they had to play Memphis State on its home court.
I don't know how that worked, but Memphis went to the Final Four a couple years later in 85, I remember. But nonetheless, I digress. Another team that for Purdue, that again, wasn't overly talented, but was well-coached and played hard. How often do we say that?
Yep.
And a few coaches ever got more out of their roster than Gene Cady. To me, that's the personification of a coach and a boss or a parent, is getting somebody to do their best and get the most out of their ability. And there's no doubt, more times than not, Gene Cady did that with his roster, and this team really epitomized that.
Absolutely, yeah. They finished 22-7 overall, and you're right, picked ninth in the conference. And why Russell Cross had left early the year before.
Yeah,
I think
right.
He was Purdue's first hardship, quote-unquote hardship,
yeah.
And it was a first-round draft pick by the Golden State Warriors, and he leaves early, and nobody thought. Steve Reed, Kurt Clausen, to Greg Eifert. Before there was Grady Eifert, there was Greg Eifert. And I think Grady surpassed Greg, though Greg might argue about that as a player, by the way Grady played in 19. But Greg Eifert was – it was a perfect team in terms of that standpoint. And you had enough guys. Rowinski was unstoppable. It was not an extremely talented Big Ten season, though Illinois – with Bruce Douglas and Ephraim Winters, and I think Doug Altenberger on that team, I believe. That was a very good team. But one of the great games, and I actually was living in Columbus, Ohio, so wasn't there. But the game in 1984 against Illinois, beating Illinois in Mackey Arena, that really delivered Purdue to a chance. And Purdue we reference things. It was a big deal back in those days when you got articles in Sports Illustrated. But Curry Kirkpatrick, who was the Tom Deanhart of his day and the Brian Newbert of his day, was the guy that wrote the story and somebody nicknamed Jim Rowinski the Prince of Pecs. And
yeah,
Jim, one of the great stories, because I can remember Jim coming into I was a manager when Jim first came in from Syosset to Long Island. He was 6'4", and we used to call him Dr. Leap because he could jump, and he was a walk-on, and he was a true walk-on. And obviously he grows 4 inches, gains about 50, 60 pounds, and becomes the Big Ten Player of the Year. And I think you're going to go back in the history of the Big Ten, and you're going to be hard-pressed to find a better story than that. You really are. I mean, I don't mean to overstate things, but that guy. But another guy that's forgotten about that team a little bit is a guy named Ricky Hall, who was point guard that's from Fort Wayne Concordia, not recruited by anybody, literally, in Gene Cady's first recruiting class. And came in, was the defensive player of the year, hit a key free throw as Purdue beat Minnesota on the last game of the year to gain a share of the Big Ten championship. A huge deal. And Ricky was a terrific player, terrific point guard, a terrific defender, and turned into a good offensive guy, good enough offensive guy in conference play. But you had guys that just made shots at the right time and a great blend of players on that team.
I remember the year before in Champaign, Rowinski banked that shot in off the glass to beat the Illini. And I remember, I think he was drafted by the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Do you remember if he got a shot in the NFL with anybody?
I think the Bengals may have picked him. I don't think he ever went to camp. There was talk about that. I think he did play in the NBA for a or was on rosters for a period of time. I was so glad to see. I had not seen Jim for a long time. He had come back to a game this year and is doing well. But he was a guy that he was on the Pistons roster in 89, 76ers. Also, he was on the Heat roster for a little bit of time in 90, but played a lot of CBA-type basketball.
Yeah.
And had a chance to, you know, have a basketball career. I think for about 10 years, he led, the CBA in rebounding, and he was also a silver basketball winner, meaning the Big Ten Player of the Year from the Chicago Tribune. But an unbelievable guy from that standpoint. All right, I'm going to go to my third, and I'm sticking kind of with my best teams, and this could be subject to certainly a fair amount of debate. And you're right, by the way, not to digress. He was drafted in the fourth round of the Bruinsky of the draft. Now, of course, they only have three rounds anymore, but that kind of is indicative of what where he was. But I'm going to pick the '94 team and the big dog as my third team on my list, and I really think that you could debate this one because Gene Katie, obviously Purdue's never had a player, maybe with the exception of Rick Mount, at the level of Glenn Robinson, and to be honest, a National Player of the Year, you know, it was an extremely impressive guy as a player, and you just don't make him like the big dog, and that was truly the case. That team also not ranked to start the season, goes off to a 13-0 start, gets beat by Wisconsin and Rashard Griffith, you wrote about this week, and also Michael Finley, but yet to end that streak. But who would, you know, one of the great games in Purdue basketball history, the game against Kansas. Not only Glenn Robinson scoring 30 points in the first half, and scored like 14 in the first 4 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable. But Konzo Martin coming off, hitting several key threes in the second half. Purdue needed everything to get that win, and yet had that disappointing loss to Duke in the Elite Eight game, the famous Glenn Robinson back injury. Though I watched that game on that's what happens when you have a pandemic, you can watch games like that. I watched that game. I know Robinson had a back injury, and he probably hit it well. It was a great defensive job by Grant Hill on him, in my view, as anything. But that was a great team, and certainly captured the it was a hard team. Ticket in Mackey Arena when Glenn Robinson was playing. Probably the hardest ticket with the exception of Rick Mount in their first 3 years of the building, but that was a great team from that standpoint.
I'll never forget it, Alan. I remember the magazine going into his senior year. Purdue had this guy. They were actually going to get the guy rated the best in the country along with a kid named Chris Weber.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was coming to Purdue, Alan, and, of course, he sat out his freshman year as a prop 48, debuted 92-93. And then, like you said, he came into full bloom as a junior. And I got a chance. I was lucky enough, Alan, to go to Lexington and Knoxville for all four of those games against UCF, Bama, KU, and Duke. A lot of fun, great memories. Now, I think it was that year, Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, the game at Michigan, the last 10 seconds or so, and Purdue stole the game out of Ann Arbor. He had a shot at the buzzer that was unbelievable. And I got so many great memories of watching him. I find it hard to believe. You mentioned Rick Mount, but Glenn Robinson is 6'8", and was scoring 30 points. And I don't know, again, look at the players around Glenn Robinson too, Alan. I mean, yes, Konzo Martin was good, but you had guys like Matt Waddell and Porter Roberts, you know, Herb Dove, Justin Jennings, Ian Stanback, Brandon Brantley. Good players, but you know, not the most sterling supporting cast as far as elite talent goes. So just great, great memories, a lot of fun for a lot of people.
Yeah, that game against Michigan, Purdue down 9 points with 2.5 minutes to go, 7 points with a minute and a half. Jalen Rose threw a pass that I don't know where he was throwing it to that gave Purdue that window. And Glenn Robinson, I think one of the first times, if you've been watching Purdue basketball a long time, he gets away with a huge travel. It's two steps, but he's the player of the year. Purdue got a call. They get out of Ann Arbor Chrysler Arena with a win.
Yep.
And then Michigan loses to the Northwestern late in the season, the last game of the season, the Saturday before the Big Dogs finale, though he was only a junior, but everybody knew he was going pro. They lose. Northwestern beats Michigan, so Purdue beats Illinois thanks to Glenn Robinson's 49 points.
Yeah.
And wins its first undisputed title, and then, of course, the first of three. But, yeah, Purdue really wasn't in a position to win the Big Ten until the last week and a half of the season. But that win at Michigan was an all-timer. And, yes, a few people ever captured the imagination of Purdue fans more than
I don't think any Big Ten player has scored 49 points since then, Alan. I don't think anybody – it's a rare feat to – he led the nation, not the Big Ten, he led the nation – in scoring 30.3 points a game, and Allen won an outright Big Ten title and a number one seed in the Big Dance and got to the Elite Eight. I mean, usually guys who score a lot of points don't play on great teams, but it was just unbelievable. I don't think we're ever going to see anybody like him again in Mackey. I hope I'm wrong, but what a fun guy. Now, for me, Allen, I guess, you know, that was a team that I've got on my list, obviously. And they would be right there at number two for me.
Okay.
If you want, I'll go right to my top.
Well, right, because my number two is the 87 team.
Yeah,
so
team
good.
There,
we'll
yeah,
skip up to our number one.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one right there. You know, I remember I was in my last semester of college in the fall of 87 and helping out in the sports information office still, and I was there the morning student season tickets went on sale, and Jim Vrujic or somebody asked me to go outside to help sort of manage the line of kids who were already snaking around, you know, Mackey to get tickets in the fall of 87. And the anticipation for that team, I can still see the media guy cover with Troy Todd and everyone on top of the press box.
Yeah.
At Ross Age Stadium. It was unbelievable. High preseason rankings, Alan. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but memories I love to relive. Fun talking to Todd, Troy, and those guys of that era, too. And I'll never forget, you know, preseason NIT, they got beaten home by Iowa State, which had a great player in Jeff Grayer. Of course, Johnny Orr, the head coach. And I remember Troy or Todd told me that was the toughest week of practice they had after that. And that got them, that got their focus sharpened, and off they went, right? 16-2 in the Big Ten. I think they lost at Indiana and at Ohio State, maybe. And, just a fun year with some great players. Troy Lewis, I tell you what, he only had the three-point shot, I think, for a year or two, right?
2 years, yeah.
If you go back and look, and if he was shooting threes like they do now for a four-year period, Troy Lewis would have been number two, probably wouldn't have passed him out, but maybe probably number two all-time in Purdue scoring. Just a special player who, man, could he shoot that basketball, and just a lot of fun watching him drain threes and watch that whole team in action with guys like Melvin McCants and Kip Jones and that whole crew.
Yeah, absolutely. And he only had the advantage. Remember in 82-83, they had the trial year of the three-point, only in Big Ten play, as I recall. But
the ACC had it too. Remember the ACC was real short.
Yeah, it was in front of Ralph Sampson was shooting threes in front because it was in front of the top of the key, as I recall. But that team certainly the hype. And again, it's to put it in perspective. It's hard for people today to remember that, you know, media was still a big deal, but it was the hype. You know, Al McGuire picked that team. That was a big deal. The number one team on his preseason show. The team that never quite got to number one. Purdue did not get to number one.
Purdue's never been number one in basketball.
That's right. And number two, they got to number two, and Temple had a game at North Carolina. I can remember that game. It was the same day as the Purdue-IU game at home. And Purdue, I believe, beats Indiana, but Temple goes to North Carolina and beats Carolina, or Purdue would have been number one. And, of course, John Chaney and Mark Macon, that great freshman that year he was a senior, I believe, that year for the Owls. But, that team was unbelievable. They absolutely lived up to the hype. It was a disappointing, you know, finish because anytime you don't win the national championship, but the loss to Kansas State up at Pontiac was an all-timer that some fans are still not over.
A team they beat by 20 in December.
Oh. Right, 29 points. Lon Kruger, another guy, one of those nemesis guys. Lon Kruger, Tom Penders, guys that got it stuck in Purdue's craw. Yeah, they beat Kansas State by 29 points over Christmas. Mitch Richmond comes in, banks one in. You knew things were. You had Purdue started that game up at Pontiac with a 9-0 lead, I believe it was, and looked in great shape early on. And I just remember because I was on press row at that time, and the fact that the Silver Dome. The entire upper arena seemed like it was Purdue fans, and it was so high up though that you were sitting down low, it would take you could count you'd hear the roar of the crowd, but it was a half second after the play it happened. It was like how fast does speed travel or sound travel, I should say, and an amazing team. But I think that group was as fun a group to watch, and partly because we're seeing this today. I mean, when you talk to a Troy Lewis, a Todd Mitchell, which you have of late, Everett Stevens, just great guys and fun guys to be around. Kip Jones, a really good player out of Belmont and in Indiana, and I think a guy that Mel McCants, who you talked to as well, is a guy that Purdue had again, no great NBA guys. Yes, Todd Mitchell played a little bit in the NBA, Everett Stevens as well, but this was a team that had a chance to do something special. Came up a little bit short, but still, if you're a Purdue fan, that is my number one team as well in terms of his best teams.
And then, Alan, you remember, had they beat Kansas State, you remember who Purdue would have played?
They'd have played Kansas, right?
Winning the national title with Danny Manning. That would have been a fun matchup. Danny and the Miracles against Purdue in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four, which, of course, was in Kansas City. It was the 50th anniversary of the Final Four, too.
Right, and Kansas, was not highly ranked, again, coming in.
Yeah,
and this is a team that kind of came in, but they had a hot player at the right time. And, of course, Kansas State with Mitch Richmond. And that was always the adage at the time. You had to have an NBA player, and that was the reason why Purdue, under Gene Katie, supposedly struggled in the NCAA tournament. In 84, 85, 86, you're beaten by NBA players. 85, you're beaten by Chris Morris and Chuck Person of Auburn. And 86, LSU had John Williams and a team that was the 11th seed that went to the Final Four. But you had to play them on the road. And in 88, obviously, Mitch Richmond was a great NBA player as well. So, it's an interesting thing that even through this list, yeah, Purdue had that NBA guy in 1994 in Glenn Robinson, and it's always helpful to have that talent. Talent does get it done at times, for sure. So
first pick in the draft, like Carroll. Hey, any honorable mentions for you, real quick?
Well, I think I think a lot. From my standpoint, the '95 team, obviously a Big Ten championship team, was a really good one. I think the 83 team and the fact that the team that kind of got Gene Katie to his first NCAA tournament, won a number of games on last-second shots. Kurt Clausen hitting a last-second shot to get a game into triple overtime at Michigan. Steve Reed beating Iowa on a last-second three-pointer at home. That team surprised some people. Got Purdue, beat one. That team also won at Louisville, one of the highest-ranked road wins in the Gene Katie era. They couldn't stop Steve Reed. I think he had 20-some points in that game in Freedom Hall against a Louisville team that I believe, did go to the Final Four, lost to Phi Slamma Jamma in that. And then, of course, North Carolina State and Jim Valvano won the national title. But there just was a lot of fun teams around. I loved your pick on the 1990s. Team, I think that one certainly is worthy of consideration. The 2000 team, we also did look over. Did not win a Big Ten championship, did get to the Elite Eight, probably arguably truthfully, the closest team to get to the Final Four. They lose by 4 points to Wisconsin in a heartbreaker. But, Gene Katie, that's the great thing. He's a rock star. Yes, his career didn't end up quite in the last 2 or 3 years, kind of went on a little bit of a downward slide, but he's remembered for some unbelievable teams. What are your honorable mentions?
Those were some. I kind of have a little fondness for his first team, the 80-81 team with Russell Cross, getting there. And that team, I've told you the story. I think I still have a little two-page cardboard program of the NIT game in Mackey Arena against the Duke Blue Devils, led by first-year head coach Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah. Can you imagine that Purdue ended Duke's season in consecutive years? Of course, Bill Foster's team in 1980, Purdue beats to get to the Final Four, and then of course 81, Mike Krzyzewski. And I remember that game. And Duke was Duke was not great. Krzyzewski didn't make that. Didn't even think made the NCAA tournament till 84, 85, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but
still coaching there.
Still coaching. And I think Gene Katie'd still be coaching if he would if they'd have let him. But no, great stories.
I think you're right.
Great stories on all fronts. A lot of fun to talk about that, and a great way to pass a Saturday. Hey, well, Tom, we'll do this again. We'll have another installment next Saturday, and want to thank our sponsors. Obviously, Follett's, Purdue Federal, East End Grills has resumed carry out here in Lafayette, First Source Bank, Home Field Apparel, Connor Hitchcock, and the group there has done a great job. Really, if you want vintage Purdue apparel, check that out at homefield.com. Really, really good stuff. The Dive and Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. We appreciate all our sponsors, and we'll look forward to next week's edition. And be safe and well, everybody.